This is Patricia Heaton. As both a real-life mom and a TV mom, I know firsthand how challenging it can be to handle the family to-do list and still find any time for yourself. As I am sure many of you have found, finding the time to read is often one of the first things to fall by the wayside when you're trying to balance the demands of everyone's constantly changing schedules. Thankfully, I've discovered the joys of listening. Whether it is a story just for me or something I want to experience with my kids, I can take advantage of time spent in the kitchen, carpooling, or any time my hands are full to enjoy an audiobook. I can keep up with the bestsellers everyone is talking about, or keep the backseat quiet with one of my son's favorite stories. I hope you enjoy this audiobook, whether you're listening while commuting to work, cooking dinner, or on the way to PTA. Motherhood, whether in Hollywood or anywhere else, is tough enough, so take some time for yourself. You deserve it. Random House Audio Voices presents Motherhood and Hollywood, How to Get a Job Like Mine. This is Patricia Heaton. This is my first book. Not to worry, I have extensive writing experience. I write all the time. In fact, I've been writing all the time for a long time. I feel like I'm using the word time too much. I kept a diary for about 2 months in 1970. It is the source of a lot of material in this book. However, I've eliminated references to my monthly friend, my suggestion that we kids buy Dad a leisure suit for his birthday, and mention of any crush I may or may not have had on Davy Jones. In the fourth grade, I wrote a report on blue whales. I've written letters home from camp. Please come get me now. Written embarrassing poems after reading The Prophet by Khalil Gibran. I've written notes to the school explaining that my kids are sick with coughs, colds, and flu and won't be there that day. I've written entire homework reports for my children. I feel safe admitting that only because you'll never guess which kid. I have too many. And he still got a C-. Yes, it was the blue whales one. From time to time, I write to the milkman, the pediatrician, the guy who delivers the New York Times, and the coordinator of my kids' school's cookie committee for the annual bake sale. I love my life. I hate it, too, sometimes. Getting to write about it is a wonderful thing, very therapeutic. The kids keep it real. If you have them, you know what I'm talking about. And if you don't, you might later. That's when the whole thing about the blue whales becomes obvious, doesn't it? It might be time for my medication. But when the publisher asked me what my book was about, it reminded me of the evening several years ago when my husband and I were sitting on the couch watching television and having a glass of wine. The kids were in bed, and for once we were not in the usual state of deep exhaustion bordering on comatose. Well, one thing led to another, and we began to get a little frisky, as they say. It wasn't anything out of the Kama Sutra, mind you. We were simply two married people trying to see if 11 years of marriage was maybe too long. That is, until we noticed our little 6-year-old Sammy standing in the hallway staring at us. We made a haphazard attempt at recovery, ordered him back to bed, and sat there mortified, wondering what to do. We discussed how to handle this delicate matter, and I was the one with the short straw, designated to go to his room and retuck him in. It was an effort to surreptitiously determine what he saw and how long he saw it. I went to his room, pulled up his covers, tousled his hair, gave him a goodnight kiss. We chatted a little bit, and he didn't say a word about what had just happened. I was so relieved. Then, as I got to the door, ready to slip away, he said, "Mom?" "Yes, Peanut?" "What in the world were you two doing?" he asked. "I have no idea," I said, shutting the door and running down the hall. That's also what I said to the publisher about this book. But I hope you'll enjoy it. And unlike some people we know, you won't require 6 months of therapy afterward. At least, I don't think so. And if you do, well, what can I say? It's my first book, after all. Cleveland. My childhood. Where did it all go right? I suffer from an early childhood malady that is more common than you've been led to believe. I call it way too normal and happy upbringing syndrome. Or as you probably know it, Whitnehus. It's easier to say if you hold your nose closed really tight with your thumb and forefinger. Go ahead. I'll wait. See, the problem is that I grew up in an average West Side Cleveland suburb, in an average, fairly functional, devout Catholic family, two parents, different sexes, five kids, no divorce, suicide, sexual abuse, drug addiction, or jail time. We didn't have a lot of money, but we weren't poor. We got to do cool stuff because our dad was a sports writer, but we weren't rich either. We lived in a tree-laden 5 miles long by 2 miles wide village on Lake Erie that was like Andy Griffith's fictional Mayberry, minus the Barneys, Gomers, and Floyds. We did have a few Aunt Bees. It was the mid-60s, and we were close enough to Cleveland to have cool music, professional sports, and tons of movie theaters. The Beatles, the Stones, Jimi Hendrix, and Barbra Streisand all made stops there. And we were far enough away from downtown to be able to read about local poverty and race riots like they were happening somewhere else. Bay Village was such a soft, gentle community that the kids from the suburbs closer to Cleveland called it Gay Village. We could walk to the beach, ride bikes to our friends' houses, buy penny candy and lucky rabbit's feet from the Five and Dime. Every 4th of July, there were fireworks, a carnival, and a parade where we displayed the bikes we had decorated with red, white, and blue crepe paper in the spokes and pinwheels on the handlebars. My best friend across the street, Sally Green, discovered that if you soaked the crepe paper in water, it would color it, and suggested that we could make a killing if we put the colored water in jars and sold it. You know, colored crepe paper water. Oddly enough, no takers. We picked elderberries by the railroad tracks, which permanently stained our mom's Formica countertops when we made them into pies. 4 cups of sugar on those berries. Count 'em, 4. We played tag, capture the flag, hide-and-seek, foursquare, red light, green light, hopscotch, statues, running bases, and the ever-popular whack the lightning bug, or fireflies, or whatever you call them where you live, with the wiffle ball bat. They were the only animals harmed in the writing of this book, by the way. Except when my cousin Art accidentally whacked me on the back in pursuit of a lightning bug whacking record. There were 7 families on the end of the street. Midland Road, how average is that? With a median of 4 kids per family. We ran in packs, boys playing sports, girls singing the entire score from the movie Mary Poppins on the swing sets at Normandy School. Well, me. I sang. We played for hours. Rules were in place. We had to be home when the streetlights came on, or when Mom gave the whistle using her pinky and forefinger that I have never been able to replicate. Everyone had their share of accidents. When my brother and his cronies locked us girls out of our secret club in the garage and began to read our super-secret diaries, I put my fist through the garage door trying to get in. My dad went ballistic. I got a Band-Aid and was grounded, which at that time meant I couldn't go farther than our front steps. The girls brought me graham crackers. Dickie Green accidentally dropped a hammer from the top of a 20-foot tree onto Johnny Madden's head. They were building a tree fort. See, this was back when kids built their own tree houses. Their parents didn't hire I.M. Pei to do it for them. Susie Alberts with the long hair did a triple flip over the front of her handlebars as we careened down Huntington Hill. And lived! Cool! Thor Johnson stuck his head through the glass window of our front storm door while chasing my brother, who was attempting to liberate the ants in his ant farm. This was way before PETA. And throughout the years, in a show of unity, we all took turns getting stung by bees, stepping on broken glass, and stubbing our toes on uneven suburban sidewalks when we weren't skinning our knees while roller skating. No helmets, no wrist guards. All you needed was a skate key and guts, baby. For years, we would stay in Bay all day. We went sledding in the winter and swimming all summer. We went to church on Sundays and had Dairy Queen every chance we got. It was all pretty Midwestern romantic. Ohio has all 4 seasons in a very big way. There were entire weeks we missed school because of snow. Not that we missed it exactly. And spring can't help but be luminous after those kinds of long winters. Summer was one long, sun-scorched, barefoot blast, and there's nothing quite so spectacular as an Ohio autumn when the leaves are turning. No hallucinogens necessary. There was a lot of laughter in our house. I remember nights when the 5 of us were all at the dining room table not doing our homework, just laughing and laughing. Well, not always laughing. My sister Alice and I fought constantly, and one night she lured me into the basement and on a dare threw an entire chocolate-frosted pound cake at me that was intended for the school bake sale. Some pound cake, that mother knocked me right up against the cement block wall. I had frosting in my ears for a week. There was and probably still is just something damn
Sample complete. Ready to continue?